Okay, welcome to episode one. I hope you like the intro, and we're going to, you know, it, just so you know, the Jesus cleansing the temple story is in all four of the gospel accounts in the Bible. And so we're just going to walk through each gospel and emphasize a different truth that we've been mulling over at a different kind of flip that happens in each of the stories. So the first one, I think we're going to kick off with John.
Yeah. Do you want to read it? Do you want me to read it?
You can read it because you have an English accent, so everything sounds better when it comes out of your mouth.
This is the Right Side Up podcast with Daniel Strickland and James Shaw.
Right. I'll put it in the footnotes. Okay? Yeah,
I just know you're very eager to get your name off things.
Yes,
I'm just like,
true.
I want to shout out the...
The James Shaw podcast does have some with Daniel Strickland.
Maybe that's right. My mum would really flip it. Yeah. My mum would be very excited. Hey, mum. And my girlfriend. Hey, Emily. So in John says this, and it was almost time for the Jewish Passover. Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple courts, he found people selling cattle, sheep, and doves, and others sitting at tables exchanging money. So he made a whip out of cords and drove all from the temple courts, both the sheep and the cattle. He scattered the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. To those who sold doves, he said, "Get these out of here. Stop turning my father's house into a market." His disciples remembered that it was written, "Zeal for your house will consume me." The Jews then responded to him, "What sign can you show us to prove your authority to do this?" Jesus answered them, "Destroy this temple and I will raise it again in 3 days." They replied, "It's taken 46 years to build this temple, and you're going to raise it in 3 days." But the temple he had spoken out was his body.
Yeah, so what's unique about this story is its placement in the Gospel of John, because the other three accounts of this story all take place right before Jesus's crucifixion.
Yep.
And so this is at the start. This is the beginning. This is John 2.
Yeah.
This is the beginning of the gospel.
Right at the start. Yeah. Jesus hasn't really done much at this point.
Right. So that's a fascinating literary, like, why is John starting with this instead of finishing this, finishing with this? So that's its own conversation.
Yeah. And again, don't get bogged down in this. Some people say Jesus did this twice. Some people say, actually, we think John is trying to make a statement by putting this story right at the start.
Yeah.
I have a story that's kind of written by my friend. Shall I read this out? This works. So Robert Capon, who is a wonderful author, I really encourage you to read him if you get the chance, he's an Episcopalian priest, was invited to preach at a wealthy church in upstate New York. He'd just written his book, The Supper of the Lamb, and he'd resigned from parish duties and turned full-time to writing so money could be tight. And he wasn't always sure if more money was coming in. So some people might have approached that invitation to a wealthy church with being really excited. Like, ooh, maybe I'll meet someone who can give me some money. Maybe I'll meet someone that wants to support me. Maybe someone has a connection with some publishers. You know, we need people like that. Instead, what he did was he got up, pulled out a $20 bill, turned to the congregation, and for all to see, lit the bill on fire. And when the bill had burned, he began his sermon with 6 words. "I have just defied your God." Wow. What's interesting about this story, I think, isn't that he doesn't end his story there. He doesn't end the sermon there.
Right.
He starts his sermon there. He starts saying, "You've become about money. You've become about something the gospel was never supposed to be." Right. And then relied on the fact that they would be engaged by this action and would keep them listening. And my friend and I agree, says, maybe this is either what Jesus is doing or certainly what John in his editing of this story, the gospel, is saying. Pay attention.
Yes.
Pay attention now. This is the kingdom that's coming, and it looks different. And that, I think, speaks to this series.
And this is the king who's coming, and he looks different. Like, and that's the idea, is that this is not, you know, I don't know what you picture when you're picturing what a Messiah looks like. you know, or when the Messiah is going to come, or even a religious audience. And you know, John's going like, it's probably not, it probably doesn't look what you think it looks like. You know, like he is not an upright rabbi who is just like working his way through this elite system of holiness and purity. And then maybe when he gets to like, you know, the top of that system might bring reform and lead a movement. I mean, he is like, I am not. This business as usual is not going to be okay with me. So he's a different kind of leader right from the get-go of John. He's a different, his source is different. His, you know, by what authority, you know, already like whose authority, who says so, like who's giving you all these questions are being raised. And part of the story, I think are, it is to provoke questions more than even answers. Like, what kind of a man is this? Like who, what kind of a leader does this? Like who takes on the religious establishment at the start of his ministry? Like, and who says so? And later on in the passage, you read about the miraculous signs and stuff that Jesus was healing and ministering to people. Which also raises is like, by whose authority is Jesus operating, both in his healing of people, but also his exposing and his confrontation with things that are wrong, with corruption, with religious establishment, with barriers and exclusionary practices in religious institutions. So there's a lot here. There's a lot of flipping the script on what a God-like leader really looks like and what a person infused with the authority and the kingdom of God does.
And I think one of the tragic parts for me is how much we still try and make Jesus like a leader of this world. So Jesus is going to lead the, well, how do we see leaders work now? Well, through force, through imposing their will by every means necessary. Danielle and I, the first podcast series we did where we dared to say we don't think God is angry all the time. We actually think God is loving and merciful beyond our wildest imaginations, because that's what scripture tells us over and over again, actually. And the backlash we got for saying that God didn't like violence, that Jesus was radically non-violent, was real. I mean, I can't cope with it. You're used to being smashed online. I'm fragile. I couldn't deal with it at all.
Wow. Well, welcome. You'll toughen up eventually.
Not great. Like, not a fan.
I think, and this is one of the passages, this was in the your preach prep, where you're like, just Google Jesus cleanses the temple.
Yeah, that's right.
And so I did it. I was like, okay, I'm going to Google Jesus. Just go ahead, guys. Google Jesus cleanses the temple.
If you're near somewhere, you can type, do that.
Yeah, because what pops up is Wikipedia's entry on Jesus cleansing the temple. And the first three pictures are famous artworks around this moment. And bizarrely, all of the artwork depicts Jesus as insanely angry with a whip, whipping women.
Yeah. It's nearly always women.
He's too. Whipping women. Like we're like, what? What? Like, that's not even what? What's
it's
happening?
A very angry, very white Jesus.
Yes.
Whipping women.
Right. And it's like, and then this is almost always the story where people are like, but God gets violent. Like Jesus is fine with like anger out of control because he like whipped everybody out of the tent. Like, I feel like every Christian that loses their stuff, you know, is like, well, I guess I'm like Jesus at the temple. So that's also an interesting thing. Like, what kind of anger, what kind of zeal is it? What does Jesus actually do? And how is this kind of the anti-leader of a culture that is addicted to power and control?
And violence, right? Let's face it. We still...
Well, violence is the means by which we do control and
we
and
keep
power.
On using violence as a solution and it keeps on not working. We're like, well, maybe more violence. Like maybe that's the, in any other circumstance, if I was ill, have you tried drinking salt water? Like, no, I got a headache. It's not going to help. Well, drink more salt water. I mean, I just die of drinking too much salt water. I feel like we've been doing this. We keep on dying from our addiction to violence, and our perceiving Jesus in that way is only enforcing that. And I think one of the things that even when we were, when we were getting mean people online that I still don't know what to do with, I just thought, can we not take Jesus at his word? When the disciples say, hey, those guys mistreated us, should we bring down thunder, you know, call down hellfire on them or call down fire from heaven? And the exact word is like, Jesus turned and rebuked them. And I'm like, that is a very kind edit by Luke, I think, saying, well, Jesus turned and rebuked them. Like, can you imagine? Like, my kingdom is not of this world. And you think you're going to fix this thing by violence? Like, who do you think I am? What kind of king do you think I am? What kind of leader do you think I am? And even, you know, when Peter attacks the guy, like, you know, yeah, this,
I just talked about this with my son, who was like, I would defend, like, we were actually watching Swing Kids because he really likes swing music. And you just went silent because you're like, what?
No, yeah.
Like, anyway, it's a famous listeners, movie my from face like the perplexed. 90s. And yeah, it's about this movement of swing kids in Germany who are basically like, they were resisting the Nazis by this like swing movement. So they grew their hair a little longer and they danced to this American Glenn Miller kind of like swing band. Okay. And so then eventually they just, anyway, so it's about this, like, the Nazis sort of like oppressing these kids who are trying to like live differently. Yeah. And anyway, it really bothered both my kids, got really upset. I was like, oh, maybe it's too early. I don't know. But my 10-year-old had to exit. He's just like, it's too sad. I can't take it. But my 12-year-old was like, we were walking afterwards and he just was like, I would not put up with that. Like, I would make that. And he just was like doing this, like, I would, if I had to die, I would die, but I would, like, and I just, and so it was this really fascinating conversation about, like, is that the way? Like, do you fight? Because if you kill that guy, aren't you that guy now that was killing that guy? Like, when does the guys end? You know, like, when does the hero emerge? And just that impulse within our society and within us, I think, that all even can start good, but actually just inevitably end in this, in this violent, like, never ending violence, which we're all addicted to. We're all addicted to this idea that there's a way to stop evil. And, or even that there's a way to perpetuate evil, like all of it. It's just like, it's this endless pursuit of more and more violence. So is that what Jesus is doing in this story?
and this
is there any mention of Jesus whipping women in this story? So there is a mention of a whip. There's a mention of some animals.
Yeah.
There's a mention of some scattering of the coins.
Yes.
And then there's a conversation that ensues with some religious people who are ticked off.
And I think this is people's line every time is, what about violence in the temple? This is it. When we talk about a Jesus who is different, or a lifestyle that is different, or one that doesn't worship violence the way that so many of us are tempted to do, and I'm tempted to do it as well. Mm-hmm. And we say, but I think Jesus is showing us something different. Well, what about violence in the temple? Same as the thing online. What about violence in the temple? And I just have to go, well, what about it? I don't see it anywhere. And to be clear, this is absolutely consistent with the Jesus that's revealed elsewhere. He turns and rebukes the disciples when they try to be violent. He turns and rebukes Peter. Says, like, don't you know I have legions of angels? Like, if violence was the way that we were going to do this thing, I would have done it, and I'm better at it than you. Mm-hmm. Like, I have legions of angels. We can blow this whole thing up. But that's not my kingdom. That's not how I do things. Like, on the cross, when they spit, you know, this scourged broken body, again, the same Jesus with legions of angels at his disposal, instead of saying, all right, let's go, angels, he goes, forgive them. Mm-hmm. Like, that is his kingdom.
There
that's
has
a kind
to
of
be
leader.
A different way.
Yeah.
And, but the different way, and this is where I think everybody gets confused, is like, we have this wrong subcategory of things. So we're like, it's either violence or we don't do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, it's violence or it's total passivity.
Yeah, yeah.
And status quo. And like, well, it is what it is. There's nothing we can do. And that those are our options.
Yeah.
And it's a false dichotomy of options.
Yes,
that is, absolutely. Those are not our options. And this is where Jesus is like, no, there's another option.
Yeah.
There's a way at actually confronting, exposing, and literally overthrowing what exists, but to a different end, for a different purpose, and in a different way. And this is this way of Jesus, right? Right from the start of John saying, like, okay, this is not a leader like you've met before, because he doesn't need to be dominating, controlling, and fear inducing. No. And, but he's also not like a, you know, wimpy, I can't do anything, passivity, you know, just we'll live in the alternative. Mm. He's like, no, like, this is salt. This is light.
I mean, this is action time.
We're doing stuff. John's introduction of Jesus in chapter 1 is as the light that has come into the world.
Yeah.
And then here's what light does.
Yeah.
Right. The second chapter of John is like, oh, this is what light does. It comes in and shows and reveals and exposes where the darkness is. And surprise, guys, the darkness is not just over there with the Romans. Mm. It's right here in the religious establishment. It's in us. It's right here in our own temple. So let's start here.
Yeah.
And more is coming. More light is coming. Let's at least start here.
More light, more light, more light. And yeah, when we flash on that light and the darkness scatters or flees, or again, coming back to this thing, what about violence in the temple? So many times I've heard this. What about violence in the temple? And when you actually read the text and you think everyone has those paintings in their mind, I think. Mm. And it's one of these times where the narrative is just overtaken the scriptures and overtaken the person of who Jesus is. And again, provides us with a much more consistent picture of who Jesus is. Because if I'm dealing with a very radically non-violent Jesus at a time when violence would have sure made a lot of sense, and then contrasting it with a Jesus who, well, obviously he's got to be violent sometimes to get the job done, that's more problematic for me than a Jesus who never chooses violence, mm-hmm. who every time. And so when we just look at those scriptures again, just read the line, he made a whip and he drove them all out, both the sheep and the cattle. So it's not like
he's not whipping women.
It literally says like he's not hurting people. And like, you know how you most effectively drive out animals, by the way, you don't beat them with a whip. You crack a whip.
Right.
And so when I preached this, I borrowed a whip and cracked it, and everyone knew it was coming. Do you know they knew
and it was still a startling.
And people were still startled by it. I'm like, yeah.
It's effective.
There is your object lesson, right? So if you're a sheep that doesn't really quite understand, but you hear this crack.
Well, and also think about the image of that for a second. He cracks a whip and then the animals leave, which is really like a liberation of animals.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
those animals were not going to have a good time, by the way. Like,
right? Like, they're literally like there to be slaughtered. And Jesus is like, out you go. And he sends the animals out, which I think is kind of like its own little liberation.
Yeah.
Like, Jesus is like, I got rescued by Jesus at the beginning of John. Like a How little cool goat's like, I got rescued by Jesus at the beginning of John. Like, it's an animal rescue
liberation party. It's a pretty big deal for those.
Yeah, they're liberated. And then he scatters the coins, which we'll talk a little bit about on another thing. Because there's a whole bunch about the money exchange thing that's kind of got a lot of juicy bits to it. The other thing that's underlying all of this, and we might even talk about this a little bit later too, is the Maccabean revolt is on everybody's mind when it comes to what salvation looks like to the Jews, what kind of messianic, you know, leader they're looking for. They're looking for these Maccabean brothers that happened in the silent years between the Old Testament and the New Testament. And these guys, it was a violent overthrow, even though it was, you know, they were the underdog by all means. They couldn't really have weapons, so they turned their farm tools into weapons, and they beat the Greeks back out of the temple, and they had defiled the temple. And there's all these, like, there's all this stuff that happened in what now is celebrated as Hanukkah, if you're Jewish, the story of Hanukkah. And so in so many ways, people are looking for that kind of leader. Mm. They're looking for that leader. And in my book, The Other Side of Hope, I talk about one of those frameworks that is in the way, you know, that we need to actually unlearn if we're going to learn a framework that could actually have real hope displayed on it. And it's this Herculean myth. Mm. So I talk a lot about the Hercules myth, which is just this idea that it's embedded inside of us that a leader looks like an ever ascending, violently successful, like big, strong, mostly man. But even, you know, I think even to correct the male kind of iconic idea of leader, I think we've just created female leaders that are the same.
Oh yeah.
Which is even more embarrassing.
We don't celebrate anything of what it is to be a woman. We just celebrate a woman who
is the same as a man, is successful and violent and can have more power. And so it's really interesting.
But she's more domineering than any of the men. I'm like, she's more violent than any of the men. I'm not sure that's the answer, actually.
Right. And so it's this, but we're addicted to this myth, this Herculean myth. And I was, I tell the story of being in a movie, a remake of Hercules with my husband. And it's where the one where Dwayne Johnson is Hercules.
Worth watching.
Which I always say, if ever there was a godlike man, right? Anyway, so not that wasn't me speaking. That's my husband, like going like the whole movie. How does he get those traps? But anyway, So the idea of that movie is that Hercules is a myth. He's made up the myth of being part god and part man in order to get more jobs. You know, he's a mercenary. And so he gets hired and the myth's working for everybody. But how he actually keeps the myth alive is he enters into this battle that no man can do alone. And because no man can do it alone, but he has a secret team that enters sort of stage left into the, and they beat whatever this monster is together. And then the secret team exits stage left and Hercules emerges center stage with his cape flying in the wind and his sword drawn and behold the great and mighty Hercules. Every time I tell this story to pastors, I'm always like, well, you know all about it. You're the pastor.
Me and Dwayne Johnson are pretty right. much interchangeable.
How we work. Senior pastor with a big cape and a large sword going, behold the great and mighty, where meanwhile there's like a whole team behind him that does all actually the work. So anyway, this idea, this myth really is working. In the movie, it's working for everybody. And he's actually, Hercules is in the front of a battle and he's fighting and he gets nicked by a sword, an enemy sword in the shoulder. And his secret team captain sees this happening across the other side of the battle. So he goes through the front line of the battle. He gets off of his horse and he goes up to Hercules and he covers his wound with his cape and he whispers in Hercules' ear, never let them see you bleed. And in the movie theater, something happened. Like it went blank for me for a second. Like it just, the whole thing just went blank. And then all I saw on the screen was a picture of the crucified Christ bleeding everywhere. And I felt in that moment, in that movie theater, I just felt like a holy invitation. Like God was saying to me, you're going to have to choose which way you're going to lead.
Yeah.
Because you can either lead like Hercules, which actually, by the way, is what everyone wants you to lead like.
Oh yeah.
And this is the thing, like even in Jesus's ministry, not only the religious elite, but like many people just want him to take the shape of a leader that they're addicted to.
And his disciples didn't get it.
His disciples too are like, why are you resisting this like natural impulse to lead like this? And then, or this is what I felt the Holy Spirit say, or you can lead like Jesus. And they're going in different directions. They are not like Hercules is always ascending and Jesus is descending on purpose. He's going a different way in a different direction. And so I feel like even at the start of John's gospel, that's partly this introduction to this anti-hero, like this man who will not, who is going to save the world, but not in the way you want him to. And not in the way that's familiar to you and not in the way that is going to be the easiest, most functional, smartest, most principled, you know, like all those things, not that way. It's going to be a different way. And the way he does it is by lighting the light in his own house. He begins by declaring the light of the world, who is Jesus, in his own temple. Like, let's begin here. And anyway, so this isn't Hercules. This isn't that. And I think this specifically, the reason why we turn it into violent overthrow and like Jesus getting angry and whipping women and is because, again, we will take whatever we can and twist this to be the narrative that we're used to and that we want. And I just feel like over and over and over again, God saying to us, especially in this season, like there's another way. There's a different way. And it's just as powerful, it's more powerful for actual change. It's more powerful for transformation. It's more powerful for salvation. It's more powerful for like what will last forever. But it is so other than what we're used to. It is so different from what we're expecting. It's so not like what we had thought that it's discombobulating. Like it really is like shockingly different. And that's part of what Jesus is inviting us to rethink, I think, in this story, as well as the season in which we're in. I think this is where God is at work now. He is lighting up the temple. He's lighting up where the obvious exclusion, abusive practices, corruption, like hypocrisy. I mean, he's just like, he's in the temple right now and he's cleansing it.
Yeah.
That's what's happening. And if you view Jesus through a lens of he's mad at the church, this is going to be one of the most frightening things you'll ever experience in this season, which I think is one of the, that's why I really want to talk about this. Because if you view Jesus as actually bringing the light,
yeah,
in the place where it's actually supposed to be. Because the temple's supposed to be the light. That's what it's about. The people of God are supposed to be the light of the world that brings great beauty into the world. So if you view Jesus cleansing the temple in this like angry, vengeance, horrible, punishing way, this is going to be the scariest time of your life. And if you're a church leader who views this as what Jesus is doing, you're going to be really petrified and you're going to feel judged and defensive and you're going to like hide. But if you could view Jesus, if you could see Jesus as freeing even the temple, beginning here because this is actually where real transformation should happen first. Beginning here because his way is liberating and honest. Beginning here because inclusivity and radical generosity and love is like his modus operandi. Like if you could begin there, this good God starting here because he values you so highly and need you to be who you were always meant to be, which is a place of prayer for the nations, that people would see and know and connect with God. If you could see that this is for you and not against you, this would be a different response. You would have a different, you'd be like, okay, what else do we, what are we going to do next? What are we going to clean next? Like, what can I do to participate in the cleansing of my own space, my own house, my own life, whatever those things are inside of me that keep people out of knowing who you are.
There's also that freedom, I think, or at least an invitation to be like, yeah, you don't have to lead in the way the world expects you to lead. You don't have to rely on this force. You can just be vulnerable and authentic. And hey, as sponsor of this series, Danielle, I will say that's something that the story side of, you know, the side of Hope does really well is bleed out a bit. I think that's okay. I think that's a good thing. I think we need, I think we need leaders who are willing to be seen to bleed.
Yeah. Well, I had this, I mean, even personally, I don't write about this in the book, but when I was in that season of God going like, you're going to have to choose what kind of leader you're going to be. And I was already Hercules. Like I had all, I literally put on a suit and fought injustice. Like, I mean, like I was already superheroing it, but I was not thriving inside because so much of that superheroing, it requires a narrative that actually isn't true. And then to keep that narrative alive, you actually have to do something with the truth. Which, what are you going to do with the truth that you're not enough and that you're actually scared and that you have crap in your life that you need to deal with? And you're, you know what I mean? Like, what do you do with all, what do you do with pain when you're a superhero and not allowed to show it? And I, well, what you do is you compartmentalize it, you stuff it down, you hide it, and you become a total hypocrite, which is the very thing.
Healthy decisions.
Right. And which is the very thing you don't want to be. So it's like a trap. Like the Hercules myth is not only a myth we love and we're addicted to and we can't even see leaders through any other lens, but it's also a trap. And we get caught in it and then we're stuck in it. And then we don't know how to get out of it without totally crashing and burning. So it's like, those are your, like crash and burn or pretend to be Hercules. Those are your options. Again, these false dichotomies. And I remember getting a call from a friend of mine whose story I tell in the book. It's the last story. Flower is her street name. And she called me like years ago, right in the middle of this invitation by God to lead differently. And she said to me, I just saw you on an interview on like some English TV show. And she goes, it was just like, I was like, yeah, you're like, you, there's nobody like you, Danielle. Like nobody like you, like you're a, it's like you're superhuman. It's like you're not even a human. She's like going on and on, like as trying to compliment me. But God had just said, you're going to have to choose which way. And I was like, I'm not, but I am a human. But like, I am. A, and she's like, no, like I've never found anyone like it. After I got off the phone with her, and I was just like a mess. Because what I realized is that I had presented that to her. I had never presented my human self to her. I had always presented the superhuman self, the savior self, the like, I've got it all together and I can help you self. Like I had actually never, I was like, I wonder how her, and as a result of that, what I know happened in her life is that she could never find anybody else to help lead her. No church good enough, no leader good enough. Like the leader that replaced me wasn't good enough because no one was ever going to measure up to me.
They couldn't fake it as well as you did.
Yeah, because I was not me. I was Hercules. And I, in that moment, I not only realized that I had presented that, but that because that was the model of leadership I had chosen, which was the easiest model. There's a model of leadership I knew. but also it, the detrimental effects were not just mine. They were everybody else's too. And you see this in leadership, like nobody can ever be this person. Nobody can ever, you know, ascend to this level of leadership. Like no, but everyone's on this, like, and it's this trap. It's just this fake, horrible trap that traps people into leading certain ways to present certain things, to get certain successes. And it just, it's crap.
Yeah.
It's just a lie. And I love that Jesus is like, no,
from the start,
right from the beginning. No, I'm not going to lead this way. Yeah. So that's the Jesus that we're talking about. That's the Jesus that we're celebrating. And that's the Jesus that we love and know.
So
we hope you find him now.
We just, yeah, keep on encouraging you to engage in the scriptures as well. When someone shares something of Jesus that doesn't seem to add up, go back to what's written. Don't rely on weird artwork. Don't rely rely on Jesus and take Jesus at his word.
Yeah, we hope you've enjoyed this first episode of John's Gospel flipping tables and us flipping the script on the who Jesus is, but also who we are and who leaders are. This is sponsored by, of course, The Other Side of Hope, the book coming out soon. And get your copy if you want. No pressure. Okay. God bless you guys.